We recording. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Coin Red Live Podcast Show. The Book of Income. Anybody know what the Book of Income is? It's a lost book of the Bible. I'm going to show you a video of the Book of Income. Listen real close to this book, because the CIA was involved in this book. And that's why this book is not in the Bible. It's called the Book of Income. Really strange stuff, guys. Hey, I've been finding a lot of material on YouTube, and we're gonna talk about the other stuff too. Of course, Star Trek, Star Wars, the Boba Fett TV show coming back for another season in March, March the 1st. Boba Fett is back. And it's a big name with an M. It's on a Disney Plus, and spoke with that, with the little green guy. Second season, I thought it was all over, you know. I thought the first and second season was it, but they're coming back with another season. So that means Obi-Wan Kenobi is coming back with another season. The Book of Boba Fett is coming back for another season. So these stories is going on with Disney. Also, Star Trek, Picard, February the 16th. Whoa! One of the best shows on TV. Yeah. That's right. The whole game of the next gen is back, including my boy Wolf and my boy Jordy. Woo, baby! And Picard did that. He brought the game back together. Woo! And I saw the trailer. I don't know what Paramount was thinking. This thing should have been a movie instead of a TV show. Paramount, think about it, man. Everybody's looking at this trailer, and they like going, what are you doing? You got the gang back together? This story should have been on IMAX theater in the movies. It might have been a big hit. Might have brought back a lot of people to the movies. Probably have been one of the biggest Star Trek movie comebacks. What are you thinking, Paramount? Disney Paramount Plus. Just think about it. 10 hours. A 10-hour TV show. 10 episodes. It's called a 10-hour movie. 10-hour movie. That's what it's called. And everybody was trying to tell you something. That's why we called it a 10-hour movie. It should have been in the movies. Come on. You want to bring back Star Trek on TV in the big screen. You had a movie and you put it on your screen network. You put it on Picard. You called it Star Trek Picard. This should have been a movie. I don't know. Maybe you got something in the future. Who knows? This might be just a test for us. To see how the fans react. And y'all might have something bigger with the game. The TNG game. I don't know. Maybe this is just a test to see what happened. And people respond to this like we think they're going to respond. I think we gonna get another TNG movie. And I think they're gonna not only bring back TNG, I think they're gonna bring back, we're gonna get a Deep Space Nine movie. And that's what we've been asking for a long time, people. Ever since they took the show off, we written petitions. They had a petitions. I signed about 5 times for a DS movie. Deep Space Nine movie. Maybe Paramount finally got off the toilet. What? Wipe this ass. It might be getting us a movie. But they might. They testing it with Star Trek Picard and see what happened. Maybe we're going to fight the Dominion, the Borg, and the Cardassians all at one time. Or they might bring back, maybe the Dominion might found another ally and bring it to the Federation and team up with the Borg. You know? And maybe, who knows? Who knows what's in those Star Trek writers' mind? Right, Star Trek writer minds? Who knows in your mind? I mean, I believe this is a test with something bigger is coming on the big screen. So pay attention, Star Trek fans. Pay attention for 10 episodes. Pay a close attention as possible. Look for Easter eggs. Look for everything sign that Paramount is trying to tell us it's going to be a movie. Okay? I don't have no surprise for you. Captain Jack, the other Star Trek YouTubers, if you're listening to this, find the clues when you watch Star Trek Picard. Find the clues. I think it's going to be a movie. What y'all think, guys? Leave those comments at my YouTube channel. Corey Whitlock Podcast Show. Alright? Come on, Star Trek fans. Y'all probably didn't really care when it first started, but they giving us Picard like we never before. The next generation like we never before. Everybody, the first season, oh, I don't like Picard. Oh, it's the worst Star Trek ever. Oh, I don't like it. Second season's okay. But they put the nail in the coffin in season 3. Now, I don't know how well it's going to do. I don't know. Maybe we might get some more surprises. Like, maybe the original Star Trek characters might be in there. Let me stop. Okay. We'll get back to it, but first I'm going to tell you about the Book of Egon.
Ancient Book of Enoch. A book that was quite popular during the first 700 years of church history, but then faded from sight.
Damn. Because Egon.
Few historical writings
are listen, guys.
Curiosity is the Book of Enoch, which has been described
the Book of
as
Egon.
From the Bible for unveiling profound truths about the mysteries of creation. It's a book filled with sensual fallen angels, violent giants, strange cosmology, and world-changing revelations. The Book of Enoch is an apocryphal Old Testament book about events that occurred a century before the birth and ministry of Jesus. Most Christian denominations do not consider this book to be divinely inspired scripture. At the end of the 4th century, the original manuscript disappeared. It was later discovered in Abyssinia, Ethiopia in 1773. Only the Ethiopian Christian sect includes the Book of Enoch in their scriptures. Today we show the startling revelations from the Book of Enoch that have been forbidden from the Bible. Who really is Enoch? Enoch was Adam's great-great-great-great-grandson and Noah's great-grandfather, who led a holy and faithful life to the Lord. According to the Bible, he also became the father of Methuselah, the person who lived the longest. He has had several offspring during his 3+ centuries on earth. Only 2 people in the Bible, Enoch and Elijah, appear to be carried directly to heaven without experiencing death. God takes him away after 365 years on earth, Genesis 5:24. Take appears to indicate snatched up or carried away. Perhaps in the same way
that's
that God
why we
took
got
away
365
Elijah, the prophet,
days.
He walked in faith throughout his life,
wow,
and that made all the difference. Whatever happened, he trusted and obeyed God. God was so fond of Enoch that he spared him the agony of death. Many Jewish and Christian traditions revolve around Enoch. He was thought to be the author of the Book of Enoch and was also known as the Scribe of Judgment. Enoch is mentioned in the Gospel of Luke, the Epistle to the Hebrews, and the Epistle of Jude, the latter of which quotes from it. In the Catholic Church, Eastern Orthodoxy, and Oriental Orthodoxy, he is regarded as a saint. Enoch was a well-known preacher, and his sermon was one of God's judgments on humanity. His ministry was a forerunner to Noah's mission as a preacher of righteousness and builder of the ark. Given the world's level of immorality and ungodliness, it was amazing for a man to stand up and pronounce judgment on his neighbors. To learn much more about the mythical figure's background and the supernatural experiences he had, we must turn to the apocryphal books written by Enoch. Scrolls of the Dead Sea. At the end of 1946, or the beginning of 1947, some Bedouin boys were tending their goats and sheep near the ancient settlement of Qumran, which is located on the northwest coast of the Dead Sea and what is currently known as the West Bank. One of the young shepherds threw a rock into a cliff opening and was surprised to hear a shattering sound. Later, he and his companions entered the cave, where they discovered a collection of large clay jars, 7 of which contained leather and papyrus scrolls. The scrolls were purchased by an antiquities merchant and eventually wound up in the hands of several scholars who assessed the texts to be over 2,000 years old. Bedouin treasure seekers and archaeologists were alerted to the discovery. Tens of thousands of other scroll fragments were discovered in 10 adjoining caverns. They add up to between 800 and 900 texts. It was the Book of Enoch, which is divided into 5 books: the Book of Watches, the Book of Parables, the Astronomical Book, the Dream Visions, and the Epistles of Enoch, with a total of 100 chapters. The Book of Enoch. The Book of Enoch is made up of several monumental works. They introduce Enoch to the major themes of rewards, punishment, the end of the world, and the last judgment. The first book, which contains chapters 6 to 36, is mostly about angels, the tree of life, Jerusalem, and the universe. The Watchers book narrates the account of fallen angels from Genesis 6, 1 to 4, who seduced women, created the Nephilim, and taught sophisticated knowledge to humanity, eventually leading to the Great Flood and their annihilation. The term Nephilim refers to the fallen ones, who are characterized as huge people, similar to giants. The link between God's sons and the Nephilim is interpreted in several ways. Some believe that the sons of God are fallen angels, and that the Nephilim are the progeny they had with human women. This viewpoint was described in the first book of Enoch, a non-canonical Jewish source, and it is still widely accepted. The first book of Enoch also mentions the Nephilim as giants, which seems to fit with beings of vast size. The apparent gigantism of the Nephilim is thought to be due to their supernatural origin, while some have contended that it is theologically problematic to suggest that angels or demons could physically breed with humans. A less supernatural interpretation claims that the Nephilim were simply men who strayed from holiness. Some theologians believe that the sons of God are the descendants of Seth, Adam's righteous son, and that the Nephilim were members of his family who rejected God. St. Augustine and other church fathers, as well as many Jewish theologians, supported this position, known as the Scythian view. The Scythian view was often expanded with the notion that the daughters of mankind were the ungodly women of Cain, Adam's wicked son's bloodline. With the Nephilim as ordinary mortals, their enormous stature... stature may be understood literally or symbolically, yet they were unquestionably great fighters. The Parables of Similitude, an apocalyptic novel about the Son of Man and the Ancient of Days, is the second half of Enoch's book. These ancient prophecies of Jesus are completely consistent with the Bible and strikingly comparable to the book of Revelation. The astronomical book describes the stars and their roles in depth. The Dream Visions is a prophecy of all human history, from the beginning of time through the end of times and final judgment. The past, present, and future are all meticulously predicted. The structure of the prophecy of weeks is similar to that of the book of Daniel. The final section reminds us of how we should live. Enoch relates the life lessons and wisdom he gained, as well as the fact that we are all subject to God. Finally, the Noah pieces is the unknown account of Noah from the Bible, in which we learn more about his purpose to preserve all humanity, as well as the sufferings of his father Lamech and grandfather Methuselah. Each composition is distinct, yet they are all united by a fundamental theme: the punishment of the wicked and the blessing of the virtuous. The Book of Enoch's Mysteries. Several references in the Book of Enoch contradict the Bible. Even though the Bible teaches that Enoch was taken up to heaven years before Noah was born, Noah is mentioned in Enoch chapter 10 verses 1 through 3. The Most Holy and Great One then talked to Lamech's son in the presence of Uriel, according to the text. "In my name go to Noah and tell him about the flood," Lamech urged, "and tell him about the time when the entire earth will collapse. A deluge is scheduled to hit the whole earth, and it will wipe out everything that is there." The Bible never says that Enoch returned to earth after being taken to heaven. So how could he have known about Noah and the flood if he penned the Book of Enoch? In the Book of Enoch chapters 10 verses 8 through 9, God blames all of earth's corruption on a demon named Azazel, claiming that the entire earth has been polluted by the actions that Azazel taught him to commit all evil. Other than Lucifer, generally known as Satan or the devil, no other demon is mentioned in the Bible. This is not to suggest that there aren't other demons, they're just never identified, and Satan is ultimately blamed for the problems of our world because he is the author of sin. In 1 John chapter 3 verse 8, Jesus stated, "He that committeth sin is of the devil, for the devil sinneth from the beginning. For this purpose the Son of God was manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil." Also lines 5 to 6 of Book of Enoch chapter 13 imply that the fallen angels repented for their transgressions. The Bible suggests the contrary, stating that Satan and his angels will perish in hellfire. "Then he will say to those on his left, 'Depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels,'" says Matthew 25:41. For the devil and his angels are sentenced to hellfire. It shows that they are reluctant to repent because everyone who repents of their crimes is promised escape from hellfire. The Lord does not waver in his promises, as some perceive slackness, but is patient for us and is not in a position to allow anybody else to perish, but everyone should become remorseful. Not only is it claimed in the book that demons repented, but it is also stated that after their initial rebellion, demons were no longer able to contact God, declaring they could not talk with God or lift their eyes to heaven. However, in Job chapter 1, Satan could speak directly to God in heaven about the job and his fidelity. The notion of heaven is also depicted differently in Enoch's book, which depicts God in heaven in an unbiblical way. The ground of the city of heaven is described as being composed of gold in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 21. The city's street was said to be pure gold since it was made of translucent glass. According to the Book of Enoch chapter 14 verse 10, his structure was made of crystal. This is simply one of many inconsistencies between the Book of Enoch's portrayal of heaven and the Bible. Many more may be found in Book of Enoch chapters 14 verses 9 through 25. Many of the Book of Enoch's astronomical and meteorological discrepancies contradict both the Bible and contemporary scientific truths. For example, the Book of Enoch indicates in chapter 33, verses 1 through 4, that Enoch mapped and numbered all the stars in the sky. However, Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 22, states that counting the stars is physically impossible due to their vast number. Astronomers believe that the Milky Way alone contains around 100 million stars, in addition to millions upon millions of additional galaxies. Furthermore, in the Book of Enoch chapter 41, the wind, snow, hail, and moon all emanate from a wooden container in heaven. This is absurd, illogical, and unbiblical. You may be beginning to see why the Book of Enoch was not included in the Bible at this point. The Book of Enoch has been described as both uplifting and touching. It is a pattern for all that has happened in the past, present, and future from Genesis through the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, to the hidden day of judgment. The volume of Enoch contains practically the whole Bible in one book, but the essential question is why it is not included in the Bible. The book is intriguing to read, but it is crucial to remember that the first book of Enoch is not scripture. That is, God did not inspire the book. In numerous early church manuscripts, the text was mentioned in the apocryphal book of Baruch. It repeatedly contradicts the Bible. The book of Enoch belongs to a group of literature known as pseudepigrapha. This implies that the author is not who he claims to be, which makes sense given that the book of Enoch mentions Noah, and the Bible says that Enoch was taken to heaven before Noah. As a result, it's much more plausible that the book of Enoch was written afterwards by someone else who fraudulently claimed to be Enoch's original author. As a result, the book of Enoch is of little use to Christians seeking to acquire the gospel teachings. But Jude may have cited from it since it was well known at the time, and the part he quoted from included some inspiring truth that helped strengthen his case for the gospel. The genuine Book of Enoch is referred to as the Ethiopic Book of Enoch pseudepigraphal work, since the Book of Enoch was written after Christ, who was seeking to gather what Enoch stated about his philosophy and teaching, which omits Methuselah based on oral history because the source is unreliable. It is believed that the Book of Enoch did not survive among the books of the Bible. Let's hear what you think about the Book of Enoch in the comments section.
Okay, people, what you think? Should this book been put in the book in the Bible? And how did Enoch know about Noah? And the question is also, did y'all even know about the lost book of Enoch? I mean, it's a lot more to tell. Now, so, the Book of Enoch is sort of like something between the days of Noah or before the Noah, you know. And what they were saying, what they saying is that this book, I think what they saying is this book, I think this book should have been in the Bible. And it was discovered in Africa. Well, that's where life begins, right? This book gotta have some kind of truth in it, okay? This gotta have some kind of truth. I mean, remember the fourth, if y'all listening to the yesterday episode about the four horsemen, this is just like that. The Book of Enoch. And I got some more material that I wanted y'all to listen to, but here's some stuff on Star Trek. And wait a minute, I'm about World War III, and they say what this book, what it would look like. Well, it would look like a damn war. That's what it would look like. The evil one is Hitler. It's the new Hitler. And he's the one causing World War III. The new Hitler. And his name is Putin. The most hated man in the world. Won't they just take a bomb and drop it right on him? He's evil. He don't need to be on earth. He need to be in hell. I'm sorry I have to judge and everything and all. But this is my opinion, man. He want to start a war. He want to destroy this. Because he can't have what America and the West have. So he want to destroy it. Some of his allies like China and North Korea is turning their back on him. Because they know it's wrong. They know it's wrong. People need to stop paying attention to this war and know it. Root for Ukraine. Pray for Ukraine people. Don't pray for the Russian people till they find a way to get rid of this Putin. Tell you, man. Don't need Russia. Russia don't got nothing. That's why he mad. That's why he's trying to kill everybody in Ukraine and go invade another man's land. No. That's why he was trying to invade another man's land. Because he know he can't come here. Try that shit. He know better. He know better to come to the West. Mess with the West Coast. He could try that shit here. He want to. Don't worry about Russia, people. Don't even give it attention. You know? Don't even give it attention. And I'm not talking about Russia Americans. Y'all Americans. Y'all born here. Okay? Your family came here to get away from that Russia mess. Now y'all live here. And I don't want no one try to treat American Russians bad. Okay? They work, they pay taxes, they deal with the bullcrap of crime and everything here in America. Okay? They came to the Western world to deal with the crap that we have here. You know? I don't care if they're Russian criminals or Russian strippers or Russian hard workers. Don't treat them bad. Don't treat them bad. This is their home. They do crime. They got the right to go to American jail. You go to a Russia jail, you might as well just kill yourself. At one time, I thought Russia and the United States were going to pin parts, get together, and build a space station right by the moon and landing on the moon. We was going to look like we was going to do this. Look like we was going to do this. We built an international space station and gave Russia a part of it, partnership of it. We included them in here. I'm going to say no more. Here's some stuff about Section 31. You know, let's get into some good news, some good Western news. Okay, some good stuff. Not double stuff. Satan and Putin can go to hell and stay there.
So,
hey everyone, and welcome to What Did I Miss?
It's hard to argue. It's called What Do I Miss? You can catch this on YouTube. It's called
five different series this
What
year,
Did I Miss?
With many other projects in development. One of these yet to be realized projects is a new series based on the mysterious organization known as Section 31 that would feature the return of the character Phil DiGiorgio from the Mirror Universe, who was first introduced to audiences in the first season of Star Trek Discovery. Since this project was announced years ago, there's been little movement on it. But just this week, we got an update from the head of streaming at Paramount that, along with some other developments, seems to position this series as the next one we will see in the near future. So I wanted to quickly share this news with you, along with my thoughts as to why I think we will see a Section 31 series soon. But before I do, I just want to thank you for clicking on this video and remind you to hit the like and subscribe buttons right now. Also, hit that notification bell so you don't miss any of these breaking news videos when they come out. Just in case you're new to my channel and have not been following the story as I have, I will briefly catch you up to date. Back in January of 2019, it was formally announced by Alex Kurtzman and others at Paramount Streaming, which was then known as CBS All Access, that a new series based on Section 31 was in development. Alex Kurtzman revealed that a team of writers had been hired and that they were very excited to continue the stories of Philip DiGiorgio. However, Mr. Kurtzman later stated that the company was only committed to producing five series at one time, so the Section 31 series would have to wait its turn, so to speak, for one of the series currently being produced to end. It is important to note that according to the producers of the series, Star Trek Picard was always planned to last only three seasons, so even at that time, Mr. Kurtzman may have known that a Section 31 series could not move forward until the third season of Picard had completed. Of course, then the COVID outbreak affected each and every series in production for the next few years, which also then delayed further development on a new Section 31 series. Then later in 2019, during an interview with Vanity Fair, Alex Kurtzman once again confirmed that not only was the Section 31 series still in development, but that a writer's room had been conveyed and that a pilot episode had already been written. Mr. Kurtzman also spoke about how this series would be a different tone than any other that Star Trek had produced so far, and compared Section 31 to the Black Ops CIA division of Star Trek. It occupies an area of the Trek universe that's never really been explored geographically. It has a new mythology to it, which is very interesting. The concept of Section 31 was first used during the series Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which you could also say that as a series had a much different tone than anything else Star Trek had produced. Section 31 was conceived for the purpose of adding a greater moral ambiguity to the universe created by Gene Roddenberry. In the group's first appearance, Dr. Bashir is approached by an operative known as Sloan in an effort to see if he would be a valuable asset to their organization. Sloan describes Section 31 as an agency that is autonomous but also works in the best interests of the Federation in order to protect it. Sloan and Section 31 would be featured in two additional episodes of Deep Space Nine, and the organization would then be mentioned again in their first canonical appearance on screen during the series Star Trek Enterprise. Much like on DS9, a member of the crew of the Enterprise, Malcolm Reed, is approached by a member of Section 31 to assist in their activities to protect the interests of what was then known as the United Earth Government. Their appearance on Enterprise proved that the organization is actually older than the Federation itself and is partially responsible for its creation. Section 31 played a very large role in the film Star Trek Into Darkness, as they were responsible for not only the revival of Khan, but also for the development of advanced weaponry such as the ship the USS Vengeance. It seemed that because of the events of the reboot 2009 Star Trek film, that Section 31 had become a much larger presence in that universe, and were responsible for changing the trajectory of the Federation from that of being explorers of the galaxy to a more militaristic vision. However, the organization really became fleshed out during the first and second seasons of Star Trek Discovery. Although still more in the shadows than their counterparts in the J.J. Abrams reboot universe, this version of Section 31 was shown to be an organized group with a vast amount of resources. Instead of working alongside the Federation autonomously, officers from Section 31 served with Starfleet officers and collaborated with them against specific threats. They even got their own style of badge, which you wouldn't think a mysterious organization that wanted to deny its existence would do. But anyway, the best part of the Section 31 arc on Discovery was the development of the Mirror Universe version of Philip DiGiorgio, played by the incomparable Michelle Yeoh. In fact, Alex Kurtzman has admitted that it was Miss Yeoh who brought the idea of a spin-off show featuring her character to him, and she has been very excited about the possibility since. Speaking of Michelle Yeoh, few actors besides her and her Mummy the Tomb of the Dragon Emperor co-star Brendan Fraser have seen a larger career renaissance over the past couple of years. Just this week, Miss Yeoh won a Golden Globe for her performance in the film Everything Everywhere All at Once, and in 2022 was named by Time Magazine as its Icon of the Year. You could argue that it was her performance on Star Trek that jump-started this resurgence in her career, and after her performance as not one, but two versions of Philippa Georgiou, you can easily see why she is so highly regarded as an actress. Now would seem to be a perfect time for her to land a lead role in a big-budget series and return to a character that we have all enjoyed so much. Well, that may be exactly what is occurring, because this week at the Television Critics Association Winter Press event, when asked about a Section 31 series, Tanya Giles, the chief programming officer of Paramount Streaming, confirmed the series is still in active development. Besides the popularity of Michelle Yeoh, I think that there are other things that position Section 31 as the next Star Trek series that will be moving forward. Mainly, the fact that Star Trek Picard will be complete after this upcoming season, which will leave only four series being created by Paramount, with room for a new fifth. Also, Star Trek is in need of a new type of series, and Section 31 would deliver exactly that. Just look at Star Wars, and the success that franchise has had with the series Andor, which has definitely created in a different tone than anything that they have done before. A Section 31 series could be Star Trek's answer to Andor, by showing a different part of the Star Trek universe and having a strong lead actor playing an ambiguous character that the audience can follow. Much like how Andor introduced its main character before the series was released in the film Rogue One, Section 31 would have the same advantage since Philippa Georgiou is an established character. When discussing how Philippa Georgiou would be presented on this planned series, Alex Kurtzman stated that Section 31 would be designed to put her character to the test in ways that a series like Discovery could not, and compared his vision to the Clint Eastwood Western film Unforgiven. I love the concept of Section 31, and I find the character of Philippa Georgiou to be fascinating, so I really believe that we could soon hear that this is the next series that Star Trek will produce. Given the way her character left Star Trek Discovery by going through a portal to an unknown destination, the possibilities are literally endless. I tend to believe, though, that the Guardian of Forever will send Philippa Georgiou back to around the same time period that she had left, which will allow her to rebuild Section 31 from the ground up. The organization was all but destroyed during the second season of Star Trek Discovery, which may explain why it is depicted as a much smaller group during the events of Deep Space Nine. I would envision that this series will follow Philippa Georgiou as she searches for the castoffs from Starfleet and tries to recruit them for a new mission, similar to how Catherine Janeway came to find Tom Paris before he joined the crew of the Voyager. They could bring characters back like Ash Tyler, but I would rather see the series focus just on Michelle Yeoh and all the trouble that she can rile up. Having her return to the same time period could also open the door to her crossing paths once again with Captain Christopher Pike and the crew of the Enterprise, creating the possibility of a crossover with the series Strange New Worlds. But I think the best part of Star Trek creating a Section 31 series is that this will be much different than anything else that we have seen from them since Deep Space Nine, and that this is something that Star Trek is in need of from a new show. I don't think that Star Trek Discovery will be on for many more seasons, so that would leave Strange New Worlds as the only other live-action series being created. Since the tone of Strange New Worlds and Section 31 would be so different, I think they could both find popularity with different audiences.
You stop it right there. You is not gonna this what's this? You gonna get my comment, motherfucker. Okay, it wasn't for Star Trek Discovery, she wouldn't even have a job. It was Star Trek Discovery who let her come on the show and act. She did a good job on Discovery, and that's why she getting her own series. It was Discovery that brought back Star Trek. And I think Discovery is going to last for another 6 to 7 seasons. Because we already got a good doggone damn Star Trek series. Just like Deep Space Nine. It's called Discovery. And a damn good captain. Just like Sisko, called Michael Burton. Okay? So, Doc, stop. Stop pinning down Discovery. Y'all doing this because she's a black woman and she knows how to take care of herself. Know more about Discovery because it's a damn good show. Oh, the best, one of the best Star Trek since Deep Space Nine. If it will be a Section 31, I hope it be more characters besides her. Because that's not right. Y'all got mad because they focus on one person in Discovery. But you saying it should be focused on her in Section 31? Man, you crazy. Section 31? Section 31? And you think it should be only focused on Sushi? And y'all got mad because it focused on Michael Burton in the first two episodes of Discovery? Come on. Discovery is going to get a sixth season. Probably even going to get a seventh season. The Discovery hater. Don't talk about Discovery no more. And you can't say nothing nice about Michael Burton and our crew. Yeah, we do need another show. But Discovery is holding it down. Strange New Worlds is only putting the rest of the board on it. But Discovery is the core who brought back Star Trek. Right, Michael Burton said. Let's fly. Let's fly. I love Discovery. I love Discovery. Sixth season. Discovery. Sixth season. Discovery. Sixth season. I love Discovery. And Captain Michael Burton. Thank you. Now, I see what these assholes say. They call it the future of Star Trek projects. What could we see? They put down Discovery. I'm turning it off, folks. Discovery brought back Star Trek.
Time to be a fan of Star Trek, with a whopping 5 different live-action or animated series sharing new stories on Paramount Plus this year. While this is exciting, it has left many fans wondering what will be coming next. As jam-packed as 2022 is with new content, after 2023 there are no guarantees on the horizon for any of these series. The only thing that is certain is that the upcoming third season of Star Trek Picard will be its last, already creating a sort of vacuum. Over the last few years, there have been many rumors and other stories about what will come next for Star Trek, but as of recording this video, Paramount has not released a blueprint for their flagship property past 2023. So I asked Nick from the YouTube channel SciFanatics to join me and take a look at 8 different projects that we could be seeing on screen in the near future. As always,
yeah, Nick is one of the stream people on YouTube, Sci-Fi Nick.
For some great content as well, check the video description below for links to the channel. All right, so we're here with Nick from SciFanatics. He's joining us again on the channel. Hey, Nick, how's it going?
Good, Eric. Yes, thanks for having me.
Awesome, awesome. So today we're talking about planned Star Trek projects. All these are in some form of, you know, production or rumor status, but I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about them. So the first thing that I want to talk about is how you feel, Nick, about the future of the next Star Trek movie. For anybody that's not aware, I'll go over it really quick because it's a long story, but ever since 2016's Star Trek Beyond, there's been ups and downs, and there's been different directors, and directors have left. So just recently, Matt Shackman left to do a Marvel movie, and now the Star Trek film just lost its 2023 release date, which for me, I didn't think was a surprise. Once you lost a director, you can't make a movie in a year. So I've already done a video about it. I'll link it if anybody wants to see it. But Nick, what do you think about the future of the next Star Trek film?
Personally, I think the Kelvin universe has had its day. They did three films, obviously the 2009 original, Into Darkness and Beyond. And I kind of feel like, particularly now that we have Strange New Worlds, which is kind of going back and covering that sort of early era of the Enterprise, I kind of feel like the whole Kelvin universe...
I agree with that one.
...played itself out. Like, I don't feel like I'm desperate for more stories with this particular crew. I kind of feel like we've had three films, they were good, let's move on to other stuff now. So I'm not in any way disappointed that another Kelvin universe movie has been, you know, scrapped or whatever, because I kind of feel like we should be moving into different territory now. I think they've had their time in the sun, and let's just let it be at three films.
I agree with that.
I think you can get into a situation of character confusion too, because if you have a James Kirk on screen and on the small screen,
that's true.
You get into comparisons and something that usually doesn't ever benefit the narrative of either story. So I think you're right on. I think there will be another Star Trek film. There's no way there's not going to be another Star Trek film eventually.
I did hear a rumor that there was something going around about doing another Kelvin universe film, but doing what they did for the original series cast, but with the Next Generation kind of cast. So kind of rebooting with Picard and Riker and Data and co, which kind of sort of strikes me as a little bit, I don't know, a little bit too soon or something for that sort of thing to happen. I think if you wanted to tell a story about young Picard, for example, rather than doing that as a Kelvin universe film, I think it would be much more interesting to do that as a series set, say, in between Star Trek VI Undiscovered Country and Encounter at Farpoint, whether it's a movie or whether it's a limited series or something. The story of a young Picard, like a Lieutenant Picard or an Ensign Picard, serving on board the USS Reliant or as the helmsman on the Stargazer or something before he becomes captain or something, you know, set in that period, you know, 15 years prior to Encounter at Farpoint or something like that, when, you know, Picard was a younger officer or something. That would be more interesting to me than doing a kind of another Kelvin universe film, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see which way they go. I know that at one point they had one of the writers from Star Trek Discovery, so I don't know if any of those plot lines would be, like, you know, fleshed out into a movie or something like that. But yeah, there will be another Star Trek film. It just won't be coming out in 2023.
Yes.
Something that will be coming out in 2023, though, that we know is coming out in 2023, is the Khan and Exile podcast. Now, for fans that don't know about this, on Star Trek Day this past year, it was revealed that there would be a scripted podcast called Star Trek Khan, Study Alpha 5. IGN is who I got the report from. But this new scripted podcast, which was announced during the Star Trek Day celebrations by Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan director Nicholas Meyer, will arrive in early 2023 and will examine what happened in the years after Captain Kirk left Khan on the untamed world of Seti Alpha 5, and tells the story of Khan and his followers before the events of the second Star Trek film. And they have a graphic here. I'm not sure if it's fan-made or not, but so this will be something new. It'll be a new medium, scripted podcast. I know these are popular. I know my fiance listens to them. I listen to podcasts. I don't think I've ever listened to a scripted one, though. I will be listening to this one. I mean, Nicholas Meyer, you know, anybody who knows anything about Star Trek should have reverence for Nicholas Meyer. He revitalized the franchise with the movie Wrath of Khan. I don't know if we'd have Star Trek as we have it now without him, so I'll be listening to it. But what do you think? Do you think it'll have the same popularity? Do you think it'll, you know, people listen to it or no?
Look, I think people will listen to it, but I honestly can't see how it would have the same level of popularity. The first time I heard about this as a concept, it's like, okay, well, what is it going to be? Like, you know, obviously we've got Khan and a bunch of his followers on the planet, you know, it's dusty, there's sort of sandstorms, there's, you know, there's little...
Now, he wanted the person don't judge either. He's the Sci-Fi Nation. He's on YouTube called Sci-Fi Nation. It's Sci-Fi Nation. N-A-T-C-S. It's his name is Nick. I watch him, and he don't judge Discovery either. He just say his opinion in each episode of Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Strange New Worlds and other Star Trek. He just do the reviews on the show. And he just tell how he feel and what's going on in the Star Trek. You know, in the background, he do got Captain Michael Burton in the background of his Star Trek stuff. And that's how I'm going to have. I'm going to have mostly the Star Trek Discovery stuff and Deep Space Nine. And I'm going to have the original and Next Generation Voyager right behind them. And also, probably if they have Strange New Worlds stuff already out, I'm going to have that in the back too. And that's going to be my background when I do start doing the screening podcast, Corey Whitlock podcast, screening podcast. Okay? So, when I start doing that, again, y'all get to see me on the podcast, YouTube's Star Trek. Not used to Star Trek, but the Corey Whitlock podcast, live podcast screening. So, you're going to get a Corey Whitlock podcast screening on YouTube, and you're going to get this. And then I'm going to switch on later year, in the year, at the end of the year, I'm going to switch to Anchor. But you're still going to get the same podcast. Everybody going to pick it up, like Apple and all y'all. All floor mats going to pick it up, but it's going to be on another courier. So, that way, I don't have to use PayPal, and I don't have to worry about, you know, my money being trapped and all. You know, I found out on PayPal somebody is using my email, Corey Whitlock Gmail account, and on LifeLock was telling me that my Corey Whitlock Gmail has been hacked into the dark web, and somebody been using it. So now I gotta go find who's using this and stop them from using it. You know, then I gotta probably go tell my banks, you know. So I'm gonna get on this. Alright. I'll get into a different, I'll tell you on a different podcast what's going on with that. All right.
Seems to me like,
let's get back to this.
Working in, on a landscape that is quite limited and doesn't give you the essence of what that Khan character is, which is that, as you say, the chess match.
Right, people complained about Deep Space Nine because it was a space station not going anywhere. Now you're in a post-apocalyptic setting where nobody's going. It's basically
going
The
anywhere.
Walking Dead in Star Trek.
Yes,
you know, so.
Exactly.
So the next thing I want to talk about was something I read last week. Unfortunately, I can't remember where it was. But somebody posed the question of, is Star Trek ready for a live-action comedy the series? Basically in the vein of what Lower Decks is doing in an animated form, and kind of like the first two seasons of Orville, more or less.
You know what? I think it is. And do you know why? She-Hulk. She-Hulk
yeah.
has been really... She-Hulk has kind of proven, I think, that, you know, you can do a comedy series or a little bit of a wink-wink, nudge-nudge sort of, you know, tongue-in-cheek series in the Marvel Universe. And we know it worked.
So, people,
Orville,
are y'all ready for a live Star Trek series? Comedy, comedy Star Trek.
So popular for the Marvel franchise, and it seems to be doing really well.
I think I would like to see it.
And enjoying it, and I think the comedy has been working in the context of that show. So I kind of say, why not? I think, why not too. I think you could certainly do comedy in Star Trek. I mean, Strange New Worlds in season one had more humor in it, I think, than the Orville did in season three. So if you were to do it like the way Strange New Worlds did it in season one, but just take it, you know, maybe one or two steps further, I don't see any problem in that. I think that could
work. Yeah, that could
work perfectly well. You know, having a quirky crew and a captain that doesn't take himself too seriously, I would be totally up for that. And I think, you know, shows like The Orville and also She-Hulk has proven that you can add comedy into a franchise that, you know, is historically a bit more dramatic, and it works.
I completely agree. I mean, I've been on record as saying that, like, Lower Decks is one of my favorite Star Trek shows, and now with their last episode going to Deep Space Nine, I think they've overtaken Strange New Worlds as my favorite, and that show is funny. I mean, it's not just, like, the reverence to Star Trek.
Yeah, it's funny, but it's not my favorite.
Rick and Morty,
Deep Space Nine and Discovery are my two favorites.
You can hire people that could, you know, create this, and people are talking about, like, do something new. There you go. I mean, that's exactly what you do. And you brought up a good point, you know, the Orville going up against Strange New Worlds.
I do not like the Orville.
Putting up third season versus first season.
Fake ripoff of Star Trek, the Orville. It's a fake ripoff for Star Trek.
I mean, that episode is pretty dark.
I think Paramount should sue. It's a ripoff of Star Trek.
And each chef gets his eye plucked out of his head or whatever as well.
It's up and down, but I love stuff like that. You know, like you mentioned Stranger Worlds with him doing, Pike doing the,
Pike doing the pirate impression.
Stuff. That was hilarious. So,
yeah.
I love that too.
See, Strange New Worlds just getting too much. That overloop, you know. It's not that good of a show, you know. Discovery is the baddest ass Star Trek that we got right now. Well, people, I gotta go, and this is not good as I thought it was gonna be. I'm gonna listen to some more of this bull crap and see they put Discovery in here, but. They ain't say nothing but the Discovery yet. Strange New World, Lower Deck, Strange New World, Lower Deck. They just giving some there. My favorite is the Discovery and Deep Space Nine. And I love the first season of Deep Space Discovery when they did the disco. They brought it back to the disco, you know? And show that this show can do just like these Strange New World can do. That crew can do just like that too. And Discovery crew is close. They interact with each other. They love each other. And they just do everything together. You know? I just love the show. And I hope the Star Trek YouTube streamers hear this who don't like the show. Too bad. I'm begging you, Paramount. Keep the Discovery going. Keep Discovery going. Because it was the first show. Keep it going. Give it six seasons. Okay? It wasn't for Discovery. It wouldn't be no talk of Strange New Worlds or Section 31. You got to get that crew in six seasons. And maybe a seventh season. And if you do get a sixth season or seven or both, send that crew off with a good reputation. Show y'all writers, the writers of Discovery, they can write. And all right? And writers of Discovery, you're doing a hell of a good job since day one. Since day one, y'all did a hell of a good job. Y'all brought back a lot of Star Trek. And I give y'all a hand, guys. Thank you. Thank you so much. Because it wouldn't be. It wasn't for y'all. And this is Corey Whitlock Podcast Show. And I gotta go. And live long and prosper. May the force of God be with you. And Ashley, and we love you. Good night. pussy too.